We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Oh, hello, hello. Welcome to the program, friends. It is, and enemies, I guess. It is 8 minutes after 2 at News Radio 930 WBEN. And those who remain as neuters, that's fine as well. Good to have you with us. We have a lot of places I hope to go today, but sometimes the show takes on an organic life of its own. I will say happy Cinco de Mayo. How would I say that? Feliz Cinco de Mayo? Is that correct? Never took Spanish. The only Spanish I know is what I picked up in Spanish-speaking countries, but once I start speaking it, then they come back at me and they start speaking fluent Spanish, and I only know a few phrases, so I get lost really quickly. I can fake my way pretty well in German just by nodding my head and saying, yeah. Anyway, welcome. Let's bring it, but we're going to, we want to talk about, I know this might shock you, and do not have a stroke. Do not have chest pains. Do not start hyperventilating with surprise and shock and awe. But we got to talk about COVID-19 and specifically whether or not kids should receive the vaccination and some other related topics. And if you have questions, we have with us now, he's not a guy who spends time in a laboratory, generally speaking. He is a guy who deals with patients. And if you have questions which are general questions and not related to your own specific situation where you're better off talking with your own physician, we welcome those calls for Kaleida's Dr. James Harith, who's joining us once again on News Radio 930 WBEN. The phone number is, as it always is, 803-0930, or if the sticklers prefer, 03-0930, and toll-free, although when's the last time you paid for a long-distance call? How many years? 1-800-616-WBEN. We do have listeners from all over the United States of America and probably elsewhere if I thought about it. So joining us right now is Dr. James Harith. Doctor, thanks again for your time. Much obliged, much appreciated.
Tom, as usual, thank you for inviting me. I always appreciate talking to your audience.
Now, the first thing I want to start off with is not actually the kids and the vaccine yet. I want to get your thoughts on a story which came to my attention earlier today. Dr. Rajender Kapila, who is was an Indian doctor from the subcontinent, from Rutgers, infectious disease expert. He goes to India. He's in his 80s. He has underlying health conditions. He contracted COVID in India, which is especially ravaged right now by COVID, and he died. And there are conflicting reports as to whether he was vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine or not vaccinated. And this, obviously, if he was vaccinated, brings to mind the question of, all right, we got the Pfizer vaccine. How effective is it really? And, you know, how could an infectious disease doctor, I can't imagine he'd go to India without having been vaccinated. And if the vaccine really works, why did this guy not make it?
You know, that's a really good question. I'm glad you mentioned that. And, you know, so I'm not familiar with the case. So there's a couple things that definitely come up. So number one is, you know, what are some other comorbidities this individual may have? So, you know, what other comorbidities may this person have that they, even though they may have gotten their vaccine series, that the vaccine did not completely take. As we know that of, you know, all the vaccines, in fact, every vaccine ever made, none of them are 100% effective 100% of the time. So this really then comes down to, you know, the numbers. So if this is a breakthrough, you know, is it because the vaccine didn't take? Or, you know, were there some other factors that were involved? So
I might be able to answer that because he was 81 years old, he had diabetes, and he had heart complications. So he had basically three big strikes against him.
Exactly. And these vaccines are the effectiveness. Does it mean you're not completely asymptomatic if you do get exposed to the virus? Some of them are such that, you know, they would prevent serious disease. You know, so if this is somebody who is, you know, may not be completely robust, and even though they were vaccinated, they're still at danger. And it comes down to some fundamentals. You know, vaccines are really not for the individual. Vaccines are for the population. And that's, I think, where it needs to be really important to be able to explain this to the masses.
All right. Well, in your experience as a physician, are the elderly more likely, and of course, one's definition of elderly increases the older one becomes, but let's just say, are people 65 and older more open to getting the vaccine, in your experience, than people who are younger?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. You know, we are finding that the people who are coming to the ICU are relatively younger. They're not the extremes of age. We're not really seeing the 80 and 90-year-olds as often as we were during the first and second wave. We're seeing a much younger population. We're seeing people in the, unfortunately, the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, you know, who are populating the ICUs.
And these people are people who were hesitant about getting the vaccine or were not vaccinated, all of them?
All of them. All of them were not vaccinated, and for different reasons. You know, some of them, they weren't eligible at the time. Others, you know, were not interested, and others didn't have, and again, it comes down to the timing. A lot of them, they weren't eligible at the time they were exposed, which is so unfortunate.
And as I recall, the last time we chatted, every patient was very overweight. And every patient contracted or is thought to have contracted COVID in a home situation from another family member. Is that still correct?
That was the majority. Yes, that was the majority of those individuals.
Okay, majority of the individuals. Now, as far as kids, it is expected that the FDA is going to authorize Pfizer's vaccine next week for children 12 years old to 15 years old. And I'd like your thoughts on if that is even necessary.
So 12 to 15, that's correct, because right now Pfizer's down to 16. And we are finding that it is the younger population that is, you know, harboring and is transmitting the virus. So are they being impacted as badly as the older population with other comorbidities? No, not at this point, but some of them. Some of these children, they are needing to go to the hospital, and some of them to the ICU. And again, the numbers are much, much, much lower than it is in the adult population, but it is still a risk. And again, this is also still a new virus. We don't know what the long-term effects are going to be with somebody who may have gotten infected by this virus, you know, 5, 10, 15 years down the road. We just don't know that. You know, what we do know is that we are continuing to spread and propagate this virus, you know, partly because of this population that's unvaccinated.
You know, I have two children. They're older children, the oldest of whom is 30 years old, and they are not going to get the vaccine. They do not trust the vaccine. They say, look, it hasn't been around long enough to know if it is going to cause long-term complications, in particular with fertility or birth defect issues, and they are electing not to be vaccinated. And I'll take that one step further. If I was a parent and I had a kid that was 12 to 15 years old, I don't think I'd let them be vaccinated. Am I wrong?
Well, so my kids actually fall into that 12 to 15 year age range, and you know, looking at the data and looking just at the technology itself, My wife and I are actually discussing, you know, having our children vaccinated, to be completely honest. Because when you break it down, you know, to the nuts and bolts, you know, with the vaccine, you know, you are exposing your love, myself already, because I've been immunized, to the smallest, tiniest part of the virus possible that's going to allow protection. Whereas in everyone else exposed to the virus, you're exposing yourself to magnitudes more of protein and potential, you know, problems in the future. So they were able to boil down, you know, essentially the tiniest part of the virus that the body can, you know, pretty much replicate and then create antibodies to protect ourselves. So my kids are going to be vaccinated. And looking at the technology, it is safe. It is relatively safe. So, and what makes this different is it's not like this is to a virus where my family's not going to be exposed. With this as a pandemic, you're going to be exposed. There's a good chance you're going to be exposed. It's not like, you know, rabies where it's going to be less of a chance, or Ebola less of a chance. This is worldwide. So I may as well have them protected with this, you know, very specific protein than having them exposed to the whole lot of it.
In your discussion, if I'm not prying, were there any arguments to the contrary against having your children vaccinated?
No, not really. My wife and I were nerds, and she agrees to that term. And you know, so you know, looking at the technology, looking at biology, looking at genetics, looking, you know, it just makes perfect sense. And you know, and honestly, I think this is where we have broken down in trying to get this information to the masses. Who remembers their biology class from high school? Hardly anyone does, right? You know, especially with regarding something that's as complex as genetics. I really do think we need to do a better job in educating the masses and exactly what is in the vaccine, so that way that there's, you know, less of a concern. So that way we truly have an educated consumer. We need educated consumers in order to be able to effectively, you know, get this vaccine out into arms.
But what do you say about the idea that this vaccine is so new, and obviously the virus is so new, that there is no way that you or anybody in medicine or science can guarantee that in 15 or 20 or 25 years, people at a young age who get the vaccine may suffer bad health consequences as a result of the vaccine?
We're not going to. That's just it. We're not going to. But what's happening is that we're being faced by a tidal wave. That's the problem. You know, if this were a virus that was in isolation in just one part of the world, in which, you know, you would only have to deal with if you're going to travel. I mean, it's kind of like looking at some other diseases like a yellow fever or malaria. And again, they're not viruses, but and again, where you would have to then expose yourself to that risk consciously. Here, we're being exposed, you know, in being to this tidal wave that is engulfing our communities. So we have a choice. You know, do we want to get, you know, expose ourselves to a virus and having it replicate in our bodies and expose ourselves to all the protein and RNA that's in the virus itself? Or do we want to expose ourselves to a very tiny part of that virus in a controlled fashion such that, you know, hopefully we don't expose ourselves to the whole lot, you know, to the virus and the effects of that. So it is a little bit of a gamble. It's like, do I want the long-term effects of the virus or do I want the long-term effects of the vaccine? I went with the vaccine. My family's going to go with the vaccine. Now, this would be a different conversation if this wasn't a pandemic. You know, so that's where it makes it really, really difficult.
Okay, fair enough. Dr. James Harith is with us from News Radio from Kaleida, and I guess News Radio 930 WBEN, and he happens to be a pediatrician among his specialties. And our phone number on WBEN 803-0930, star 930, and 1-800-616-WBEN. Doctor, my next question is somewhat self-serving, but not entirely, because I've had a number of people contact me saying, oh my goodness, the same thing happened to me. I got the Moderna shot. Beginning tomorrow, I will be maximally protected against COVID-19. But both Moderna shots gave me swollen feet. I mean, badly swollen feet, especially the second Moderna shot. I thought it might be the sodium in the kosher dills I so enjoy. But I did a little test after the first bout with swollen feet after the first Moderna shot. I waited till it subsided, and then I ate a whole bunch of dill pickles. No swelling whatsoever. After the second shot, 6 days later, you saw the pictures. They were so swollen that blood was forced into the nail beds. It has since subsided, but a number of people have said, whoa, the same thing happened to me. What do you tell people about edema, swollen feet, for instance, in this vaccine?
So it's a relatively rare complication. And again, after you sent me those lovely pictures, thank you, Tom, I actually dove in.
You got to see the vasectomy ones.
Sure. Yeah, I know. I was definitely looking at the... looking into the literature it does happen. It is a known but relatively rare complication, and it looks like it probably is related to the immune response. And so let's remember how this works. So we introduce some mRNA, which is incorporated into, I have to be careful, it's incorporated into the cell, not to the nucleus. It's incorporated into cell, so that way it can produce that particular protein, which is the spike protein, and then your body has a response to that to create antibodies. So when that happens, it also pretty much stimulates part of your immune system, which part of it is to attract other white cells. With that are other proteins like interleukin-4, interleukin-6, and all that pretty much, you know, tells your body, hey, it's time to fight some sort of infection. Part of that includes some vessel leakiness. In other words, you know, your capillaries get a little leaky. The whole idea is so that white cells can go out and infect. I don't know, or fight infection, I should say. I don't know if anyone's seen anyone really, really critically ill, but they become really edematous all over the place. Yep. You know, so that's from the capillary leak. So, and as you saw, Tom, that eventually did go down. And it turns out, on average, what we see is that people begin to have these symptoms, if they do develop these symptoms, about 8 days after the injection.
Yeah, for the record, I would go through the vaccine again because, you know, we talked about this before. My own individual calculus was, given the age I am and my givens, that it just made sense, statistical sense, to get the vaccine. And I would go through the feeling like crap and those wonderful 12-hour after the vaccine, shall we say, lower GI symptoms, which almost cost me a new couch.
Yeah. And I tell you, you know, and if we think about that even more, that is just one of the proteins from this virus. Imagine what it would be like if you actually had the virus itself.
Ugh.
That's kind of what, and that would be my concern. I am thrilled that you got the vaccine, and that I'm thrilled that you're actually telling Western New York and beyond, you know, that it is definitely worth, you know, going ahead, because you're not only protecting yourself, Tom. You're also protecting the people around you.
Well, what I've been telling people is that they have to discuss this with their physicians and go and think about their comorbidities and, in consultation with their physicians, arrive at the best decision for them. And for some of us, myself included, it was a no-brainer.
Exactly. I support you 100% with regarding that comment.
But I can't speak for everybody.
No, and especially our friends, unfortunately, who have different malignancies and stuff. That's where, you know, we really are dealing with the immune system, and they really need to talk to their hematologist and oncologist as well for them to be on their medical team, essentially.
We have with us Dr. James Harreth on News Radio 930 WBEN. I could talk with the doctor for hours at a time without abatement, but that wouldn't be very fair to you. If you have questions in general about COVID, but particularly your children and the vaccine, Dr. Harreth, among other things, specializes in pediatric medicine. Cinco de Mayo. No, that is not Lou Diamond Phillips. That is the real Richie Valens, not his real name. It is 2:37 at News Radio 930 WBEN. It is Bowerly. Dr. James Harreth is here, and Pfizer might get the go-ahead for 12 to 15-year-olds to be vaccinated with its vaccine coming up within the next week by the FDA. And if you have questions about that for the doctor, Dr. James Harreth is here and ready to speak with you about that and anything related to COVID. Let's go to Larry in Buffalo first up on WBEN. Hello.
Hi, Tom. Quick question. I got my first Pfizer vaccine 3 weeks ago, and normally there's, people don't have reactions to the first shot. I had a terrible reaction. I woke up Tuesday morning and I had such a sore throat I could hardly swallow. My esophagus, my windpipe was tender to the touch, and it was like for 10 hours. Now I'm scheduled for my second shot Sunday. Am I to expect the same kind of reaction, or, I'm scared?
Understandably. Doctor?
Well, that's kind of interesting. One would question, is this a reaction to the vaccine since it's so far out, or is this something else independent? Is this another virus, or is this something else as well? I would make sure that you would, talk to your healthcare provider as well, just in order to be able to double check. One would be concerned about flu, one would be concerned about RSV virus as well. Or is it allergies on top of that? So that's another variable that's definitely rearing its ugly head over the last couple of weeks, too. So what you don't want to do is be symptomatic if this is, if, God forbid, it's coronavirus, and then you go to get your second shot and you're exposing other people as you're getting the second shot. So I would definitely talk to your healthcare provider to give a little bit more guidance.
Larry, have you had a COVID test?
Oh, yes, and I was negative.
Okay. Was that shortly before you received the vaccine?
Oh, well, maybe a couple of months before.
I think what the doctor's saying is good advice for anybody, and that is for individual questions like this, you want to talk to your own doctor to make sure that you're doing the right thing. See what your own doctor has to say.
Well, whatever. I thought I'd ask. I'm still going to get it Sunday. I got to get it over with.
All right. Larry, thank you. That's a good soldier. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Let's go to our next caller on WBEN with Dr. James Harreth, kind enough to take time out of his schedule to join us. It's Allentown, and Fran is on WBEN. Hello.
Hi, Tom. I have a question for Dr. Harreth about children getting the vaccination. And my question is that since the vaccination is still experimental and it really hasn't had any long-term clinical studies done on it or trials in the general population, including the younger population, children are not completely grown neurologically or physically until they're 25. I believe that's correct. And would there be any considerations, taking that factor in and that the drug is experimental? How safe would he think that is? And I'm going back to when women are pregnant and they're advised anytime during the pregnancy not to take in or have any certain drugs or medications taken due to birth defects. And they don't exactly know, what period of the various trimesters that the vaccinations or the medication may cause birth defects. What are his thoughts on how this will affect children's neurological and physical developments? up to the age of 25.
So you've covered a lot of topics right there. So with regarding teratogenity, it really does come down to risks and benefits. Let's talk about that. And so what you would want to do is you want to talk to your child's pediatrician and or specialist and look at what the risks and benefits would be of the vaccine versus getting the virus itself. So if you have a child who may have like a chronic disease like cystic fibrosis, in which their lungs are not doing very well to begin with, you know, would the virus be terminal if they end up getting, a coronavirus? So then would the benefit of the vaccine outweigh the risk, number one? You know, so that's what you want to do is, you know, look at the risks and benefits, one. Two, with regarding long-term effects. And again, you know, there's a study group that's out there currently, so far so good, but regarding long-term, yeah, that hasn't been out there long enough in order to be able to study what's going to happen in 10 or 15 years. But we were saying before that, you know, a good majority of these individuals are going to be exposed to this virus in the, in the community almost anyway. You have to then talk to your pediatrician and or pediatric specialist and say, hey, what is the risk of the virus versus the risk of the vaccine as well? So, and then it has to be tailored to that patient, to that child. Essentially, with regarding the, you know, a correlation to pregnancy, that's completely different because when you're talking about the first trimester, you're talking about a fetus that's not even completely formed yet. So that's when you worry about teratogenicity and you're worried about, you know, birth defects in the forming of the child. Whereas in at age 12 to 15, you know, you have a good, you're very similar to how you're going to be in an adult when it comes to the building blocks, essentially. With regarding development, we're still developing into our 20s regarding psychologically.
Right.
Or into our 50s, as the case may be.
Yeah, that was my question, is how it would affect the developing child, and, you know, especially neurologically. And I don't know, a lot of people don't realize that the human is not fully developed until they're 25. And so that was my main concern. And yes, it is risk and benefit depending on the health of your child or any comorbidities that the child may have.
All right, Fran, thank you very much. I hope that answers your question. Can we just talk for a moment, Dr. Harith, about herd immunity? Because it seems to me the goalposts for herd immunity keep on moving upward. Because way back when I was reading, hey, herd immunity happens when 60 to 70% of the population has been vaccinated or has had a disease. Now it's like, well, we need 80% herd immunity. We need 90% herd immunity. Then we got this guy at the Mayo Clinic saying, we're never going to have herd immunity because Americans are too resistant to the vaccine. You'll forgive me if I'm frustrated that the goalposts keep moving on exactly what defines herd immunity, and I don't know if included in those statistics are those who aren't even eligible to receive the vaccine or those who have natural immunity because they had COVID-19 and may have been asymptomatic. I think it's unrealistic.
Tom, we're on the same team when it comes to the frustration factor and moving goalposts. I agree. So, and it really does depend on how easily the virus is transmitted. And as this virus, you know, mutates, we're going to see that, yeah, that magic number is going to change a little bit. But the numbers will include those people who are not eligible to receive the vaccine and where the vaccine is not effective. So that's the whole idea, is to get to this magic number so that, you know, we don't have the prevalence in society. And that, let's say, you're one of those individuals that may have gotten the vaccine series, but your immune system didn't take it up, that, you know, you're not going to get the disease because it's not in the community, because everyone else, you know, immune systems that worked and it's keeping that virus at bay. And what would be lovely is if, you know, we're able to then have it be like smallpox, where it's completely eradicated. I mean, that would be my goal. I would love that, you know, but.
So what is the true number for herd immunity then? And is it realistic?
My understanding is the true number with regarding the scientific data is close to 80% of the of the U.S. or hopefully eventually the world in order to be able to have, you know, herd immunity, at least in the U.S., 80%. And that's because of how easily transmissible this virus is, or at least this variant now. And that's what makes it so difficult is as this thing changes, and if it becomes even more transmissible, that number is going to go up. You know, so whereas in some diseases, you have to be very close in order to be able to transmit the virus. Whereas something like chickenpox, you walk into a room and sneeze, you can infect the entire room. That was how close to how smallpox was, very transmissible. So it depends on, that's what determines the percentage of population needs to be able to be vaccinated.
Doctor, are we ever going to be able to lose the masks and dance again or stand up again without masks? That's number one. Number two, I don't understand why fully vaccinated people have to wear masks, because people who are not vaccinated, A, have made the choice to not be vaccinated, and B, have made a choice to expose themselves in a public setting.
You bring up, again, another interesting topic in what is the goal? What is the goal of the mask? And what is the goal? Is our goal to be able to protect as many people as possible in the highest, all risk people in risk, all risk pools people are in? Or is it to protect the individual itself? So if the goal is to eliminate all transmission and to protect everyone, even those people who are defiant and don't want a vaccine, then the masks are going to be there, because that's that other layer, because we do see that the vaccine is not 100%. It's very high though, so there is that chance. But again, then you get down to practicality as well. So that's when we start looking at science, and then you look at politics. So is it going to be practical to wear masks at all times if everyone who are eligible doesn't want to be vaccinated? I don't think so.
Well, see, this is where my frustration comes in, because originally it was 2 weeks to stop the spread. That was the goal. Now it seems like the goal is zero spread, no cases at all. And that is entirely, it ain't going to happen. And I would like our regular life back. And life always involves risk. You took a risk driving to work today.
That's right. No, I agree with you. And again, that's where science and in politics, begin to mix. I'm trying to hopefully stick just with the science aspect as we're speaking here. But then with regarding politics, it really, how I see it is that eventually I do believe the masks are going to go away. I believe the virus is still going to be around. I believe myself as a healthcare practitioner, I'm going to be probably wearing a mask at work for the rest of my career, darn close to it. That's kind of what I see, unless we see something change. And again, I follow trajectories and statistics. That's just what I do. So, and I accept that. During flu season, I wear a mask when I walk into a room, just so that way there's less of a chance for me to pick it up, because I don't want to be sick. I just want to be able to help my patients.
I wear a mask when I walk into a room to avoid scaring small children and animals. Let's get back to the calls on WBEN. Dr. James Harith is with us, internal medicine specialist, pediatric specialist. Next up, we have Kim in Springville with an interesting question. Kim, you're on WBEN. Hello.
Yes, hi. I'm concerned about the people that are coming up from the southern border that have been flown all across the United States that are COVID positive.
And that, to me, that is a legitimate concern. Dr. Harith, I'm not sure how many of those people have been located here in Western New York, but I don't know again, keeping politics out of it and just sticking with the science, if you're trying to cut down on COVID, sending people who may be COVID positive all over the country does not seem to me to be especially prudent if the goal is really to reduce COVID.
I agree.
I mean, my concern is, are we just going to go into another lockdown?
Again, fair question. Doctor?
I don't know. It really all depends on how we handle those individuals who are under investigation, how we test, and whether these individuals are eligible for vaccination or not. I guess it's like anything else. Whether it's somebody from the southern border, whether it's somebody from another state, you know, that is that's not vaccinated and that may been exposed. I think no matter what, we have to just make sure that we look at those individuals and see whether we can get appropriate testing and timely testing. And hopefully they are able to follow appropriate quarantine guidelines so that way they can be safe to then be in the community. I guess it's like anything else we've been doing before.
Something I do not understand, and I think I speak for a lot of people, places like Ontario are in virtual lockdown. Grocery stores and pharmacies only, their rates are skyrocketing. Florida and Texas are wide open, and they're like in the middle or toward the end of the pack in terms of COVID cases. Doesn't that defy the whole purpose of a lockdown?
I would think so. But what might be different as well is, you know, are they able to then interact in an outdoor setting versus an indoor setting, you know, where you've got less of a chance to have an open airflow, you know? And again, that's how this thing spreads. This thing spreads to people who are in relatively close contact with a little bit of airflow, and that's how you're going to, you know, pick it up, you know, is in the air versus, you know, by touching anything. Now, of course, wash your hands, clean your hands, don't touch your face, all that usual stuff. But it's almost like comparing apples and oranges a little bit.
Because of the climate?
Climate, yes. Yeah, so and what's frustrating here is that, you know, it's been so relatively cool, and then with the snow that we had in April, it's just absolutely frustrating. It's open for people to be able to be outside, do stuff outside, eat outside, you know, and do, you know, relatively loose congregations outside. We saw that during the summer that the prevalence in Western New York was quite low, and we attributed it to being able to be outside instead of being close indoors. So. And that's kind of what I'm hoping we're going to be able to see moving forward as the weather gets better.
Dan in Akron, you're on WBEN. Welcome to the show with Dr. James Harreth.
Hi, doctor. I just had a question. You said it's a benefit-risk analysis, just like everything in life when we make a decision. My primary physician is an Amherst. He's very, very well known. And after weighing the benefits of the risk, he advised me not to. I'm in my 40s. I'm extremely healthy. He explained to me I have far less than 1% chance of being hospitalized. He said I wouldn't if I were you. Now, having said that, and having to, you have to respect that opinion, as you also said, it's a cost-benefit type of weighing. How do you feel, and are you offended when a politician is trying to tell people to get a vaccine no matter what, but someone's primary physician says, if it's not for you, I don't think you should do it? Does that offend you as an MD?
All right, Dan, thank you for the call. And I'd like to add on to that as an addendum. People in the highest risk group even have a 98.5% chance of survival with COVID-19. Your response with respect to risk benefit?
Yes, no, exactly. So we're talking about then two separate topics then. So with regarding the vaccine, we're talking about protecting the individual and we're talking about protecting the population. And it depends on what your goals are. So, and I've been saying it before, in that for this particular virus and this pandemic, the vaccine is not just for the individual. The vaccine works because it's population medicine. It works because I am protecting the next person in front of me. The mask works because I'm not just protecting myself. I am protecting the person in front of me as a goal. So I think one, and it comes down to education, you know, so how am I effective as a physician in trying to communicate to my patients why something is important? And I would hope that the, you know, other physicians who are in the community realize what the purpose of vaccinations are for, essentially, in which vaccinations as well. So, and that's what it comes down to.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I had five or six physicians say, yep, absolutely get it. And I had one who was not exactly thrilled with the idea of getting it. But I will tell you that knowing what my comorbidities are, even with the side effects, I personally, with my situation, I would absolutely do it again, just like I'm going to get the second shingles shot, even though the first one knocked me on my arse. Of course, I'll wait a little bit between COVID and shingles number two. Doctor, thank you very much again for your time. I appreciate it highly, and I'm sure we'll chat next week.
Sounds good. I always appreciate it, Tom. Thank you so much.
Are there any other medical pictures of my body I could send you?
Oh, I don't know. I think we're good for now, sir.
All right, just asking. All right, maybe some surgical scars. All right, thank you. Dr. James Harith with Kaleida. I really did send him pictures of my feet. I did not post them on Facebook because I think that would have gotten me in Facebook jail for just grossing people out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.